And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sidney Wildsmith.
It's over. Election 2004. George Bush prevails. To many of the environmental movement, the loss comes as not only a shock, but an historic challenge. How will the battle to save the nation's wild places continue, as George Bush, considered by many to be no friend to the environment, now sees his victory as a mandate to continue his policies? We look at the change, the challenge, and the hope of the environmental movement in the new Bush era when we return here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Yesterday, George Bush announced his victory as President of the United States. Kerry, acknowledging defeat after a hard-fought campaign, departed with his family and running mate John Edwards, and with them, the hope for a new direction in the nation's environmental policies. As in any election, there are winners and losers. But none felt the defeat as harshly as the nation's environmental community. Today, I will provide my insights into this historic moment to analyze the victory, challenge the movement to change strategy, and present hope for the re-emergence of a true American land movement. I know many of you listening have strong feelings. This is a time when hearing from you will make a difference. We must look at ourselves more than ever before to try to discover what has happened to our dream and how we may somehow come to grips with our place as environmentalists in this nation. So I invite you listening now, live, to phone in with your observations. It's easy. Pick up the phone and dial 888-327-0061 or 888, or I should say, and another way of looking at this, 888-327-0061. But first, the news. George W. Bush won his second term as President of the United States in a highly contentious and hard-fought campaign, which pitted the incumbent president against Massachusetts Senator John Kerry. The spread, 51 Bush, 49 Kerry, is close and left the country divided. Early exit polls indicated a win for Kerry, but the numbers solidified as polls closed, giving the win to George Bush. This year's race saw Ohio emerge as the winner-take-all state, and despite widespread problems with lines and voting machines, when all was said and done, Kerry conceded defeat on Wednesday morning. Analysts and Bush's campaign team gave much of the credit for his win to a highly unified evangelical bloc of voters who showed up and voted for Bush. The efforts to register millions of new young voters by Democratic precincts and volunteers, although successful in numbers, failed to materialize in actual voters. Bush, in his acceptance speech, promised to carry on his mission to make the tax cut permanent, continue his efforts to ban same-sex marriages, and defeat the terrorists. He also invited all of those who voted for Kerry to give him a chance to earn their trust. Reactions by the winning and losing sides showed marked differences. Bush supporters joined in a sense of victory and an affirmed mandate to continue his policies, while Kerry supporters generally expressed a feeling of numbness and fear for the future. Both House and Senate saw expanded Republican margins, adding to the sense of defeat amongst Democrats. America faces a difficult challenge to find common ground. The most comprehensive international assessment of Arctic climate change has concluded that Earth's upper latitudes are experiencing unprecedented increases in temperature, glacial melting, and weather pattern changes, with most of those changes attributable to the human generation of greenhouse gases from automobiles, power plants, and other sources. The findings confirm earlier evidence that the Arctic is warming far more quickly than the Earth overall, with temperature increases in some northern regions exceeding by tenfold the average 1 degree Fahrenheit increase experienced on Earth in the past 100 years. And that's the news. Today, we look at the 2004 presidential election. With warnings like the one we just read about during the news, and others which talk about mass extinctions, penetration of protected natural areas by the extractive industries, the increase in oil prices, and the potential massive increase in global demand of consumer items by China and the developing world, it came as an enormous shock to the environmental community, scientists, citizens, and the world at large that environmental issues played essentially no part in the U.S. presidential campaign. And that with the election of George Bush, the administrative mandates which streamline logging, mining, and oil exploration on public lands, and a general nonchalance towards the concerns raised by leading NGOs, experts, and activists will continue. The environmental community reacted quickly to Bush's re-election. Wednesday, Grist Online magazine published the responses of some of America's leading environmentalists, and I want to give you a sampling of the response to the re-election of George Bush. So we read from the Grist summary, and I certainly encourage you to check out Grist Online because they take the environment and our issues and make them a little fun and entertaining, which we all need more of. So, thanks to Grist, I want to share some of the responses by America's leading environmentalists to the election of George Bush. I start with Rick Bass. Now, Rick Bass is an author. He's written 17 books, including 9 Mile Wolves and The Sky, The Stars, The Wilderness. Rick Bass said, "No surrender, no giving up. Prepare strategically for 2008. In university towns and address the youth vote. Begin priming first-year college students for election 2006 and 2008. Push for all of the things we would have asked and expected of Kerry. Moving to Canada is not an option. The homeland needs defending." And Terry Tempest Williams, who has appeared here on the Wild Side News and is an extraordinary voice for the Earth, author of many books, including Refuge, and A Natural History of Family and Place, and An Unspoken Hunger, she said, "Everyone should watch Eminem's video Mosh and put on green sweatshirts as we stand our ground and remain ever vigilant and engaged." David Orr, wonderful author, who has a new book out. I hope to have him on the show here soon. It's called Last Refuge. He had quite a bit to say. He said, "First, let's get the name of the thing right. The election 2004 confirms James Madison's worst nightmare, the takeover of all branches of the federal government, not just by a single party, but by an extreme faction of that party. Second, let's be clear about where we are headed. We the people are about to get more corruption, more division, more lies, more terrorism, more pollution, more breaks for the wealthy, more religious fanaticism, more corporate subsidies, more kids left behind, more struggling families, more debt piled on the backs of our children, more urban neglect, more nutty ideology, and further procrastination on the issue of potentially catastrophic climate change looming just ahead. Third, the long-term objectives are clear." And by the way, this is David Orr. "Restore democracy to the United States by eliminating money from politics. Reassert public control of the airwaves. Restore a free, locally owned press. Repair the frayed separation between church and state. And educate the people once again to be discerning citizens." How can we do such things? David Orr says, "The same way all great and noble things are accomplished, with patience, courage, energy, certainty, and a mastery of the art of strategy. The soft underbelly of the Bush-Cheney Rove empire includes all thoughtful conservatives disturbed by recklessness, all honest persons offended by mendacity, and all true Christians sufficiently alert to notice the discrepancy between the words and life of the Prince of Peace and our foreign and domestic policies. And we have no energy for despair." I continue with the Scott Sanders. He's an author of numerous books, including The Invisible Company, Writing from the Center, and Staying Put. He said, "We need to resist the tax on air, soil, water, and wild lands. But we also need to change our culture, not just our leaders and technology. We need to speak out and act more for conserving, more sustainable, more peaceful, and more just practices in our homes, our workplaces, our schools, and our public assemblies. We must refuse to shut up, refuse to give up, in the face of corporate consumerism and a mass culture peddling the narcotics of entertainment. We need to articulate and demonstrate a more decent and joyous way of life. Paul McKibben writes regularly for the New York Review of Books, the New York Times, the Atlantic Monthly, and he's also on the Grist Board of Directors. Bill McKibben says, "There is nothing but discouragement in these election results. It will be hard as hell to save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge with a new Senate, and essentially impossible to get anything significant passed regarding climate change, or probably anything else. More than ever, we'll be playing defense at the national level and trying to get real things done at the state level, at least in those fringe of states tinted blue on the TV screens. But make no mistake, last night guarantees America won't re-enter the world conversation on environmental issues for years to come." Martha Marks is founder and president of REP America, Rep America. It's a national grassroots organization of Republicans for Environmental Protection. "Conservationists should intensify public outreach and find more effective ways to engage middle America and the business community. For the next 4 years, conservationists should hold the line in D.C., but direct more energy at getting results where the climate is more hospitable at state and local levels of government." Obviously a shifting from federal to state and local action. And we also hear from Paul Hawken. He's an environmentalist, entrepreneur, journalist, and best-selling author. He's the founder and director of the Natural Capital Institute. Paul Hawken says, "Push for complete campaign reform. Remove all corporate money from politics. Depoliticize the environment. Separate the U.S. Forest Service from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and place both in the Department of Interior that is a civil servant, science-based organization. Make carbon drawdown an international priority. Create a revenue-neutral rebate system to double America's automobile fleet mileage. Make conservation and efficiency lucrative for the average person." And Peter Mathiasen, a wonderful novelist, naturalist, environmental activist, wilderness traveler. His nonfiction includes The Snow Leopard and The Spirit of Crazy Horse, and his fiction includes Killing Mr. Watson and Bone by Bone. He said, "Environmentalists must not lose momentum or slacken our efforts, even for a day, in this desperate fight to defend our American land and life from 4 more years of reckless exploitation by the Bush administration and its corporate directors. We must all join forces to attract support politically, financially, and in the media. Unceasing exposure and inevitable public outrage may inspire strong campaign finance reform and persuade a president no longer seeking re-election to brighten the most disgraceful environmental record in living memory by clearing the stink of fossil fuel, of Enron and Halliburton, from our sadly soiled White House, by putting a stop to irresponsible deregulation and removal of environmental protections in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the Tongass National Forest, the Rocky Mountain Front, and elsewhere, by supporting a minimum 40 mile per gallon fuel standard, and by urging congressional commitment to clean renewable energies, thereby working to preserve at least the semblance of America the Beautiful for our innocent inheritors." And Peggy Shepherd, she is co-founder and executive director of We Act for Environmental Justice, also known as West Harlem Environmental Action. "Last night, prior to President Bush being declared the winner, pundits were speculating that drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge area might begin soon. That should give some sense of how difficult it will be to make progress on a strong environmental agenda under another Bush administration. One way to start preparing for the next 4 years is for environmentalists and environmental justice advocates to begin focusing on how we articulate a vision of the future that inspires alliances to address environmental justice and global climate change, strengthen the Clean Air Act, build support for the precautionary principle, improve water quality, and develop a sustainable energy policy. We must share vision and values if we are to build a winning political coalition that can reform states' environmental policy, improve environmental health, maintain our advocacy on climate change, and stop the Bush administration's attempt to roll back environmental regulation. The voices are strident and committed to carry on the struggle. But before we just continue, I think it important to acknowledge a truth. Those of us who allied ourselves with John Kerry with the hopes that he would champion our cause are now left with the same old guard in the White House. We lost. Much to our surprise, we really lost. We can debate the factors which electronic voting machines may have played or the difficulties that long lines may have had, but I think we'll miss the point. In the vast heartland, George Bush carried the day. We can blame this on Karl Rove or anyone we want, but I think it's time we take the time to understand what it is that holds a majority of voting Americans to re-elect George Bush. For we must get smarter and better in our strategies. And perhaps we need to start by looking at our history and understand why we are where we are now. We begin with an amazing statistic for us, and that is that over 70% of all Americans see nature and public lands as important to their sense of well-being. This is a huge plurality of Americans who share our values for the wild places. So why is it that our candidate barely mentioned the environment? What is it about us and our issue that is so threatening, despite the huge American love of its land, to preclude it from being championed, as we all expected it would be? We need to take a serious look at this. To understand it, we must look at our beginnings. And we will continue this discussion about environmentalism in the new conservative era when we return here on the Wild Side News.